That's Count Basie and his orchestra with Tall Cotton. It's from his 1975 album, Basie Big Band. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And my goodness, it's day four, the final day of the Democratic National Convention. It's the day that Queen Hillary is officially coronated and makes her coronation speech. And all the hoopla, all the choreography, all of the analysis and television and media coverage, all would have come to a conclusion that Hillary is the queen. She's the one. President Barack Obama boosted Hillary Clinton's and his own political fortunes last night with a keynote speech at the Democratic National Convention, effusively praising both the leadership credentials and accomplishments of his scandal-plagued Secretary of State and the fervor. He also praised the fervor with which Americans validated and clung to his audacity of hope throughout his tumultuous two terms in office. He was a historic first, as Clinton will be, as a glass-breaking, glass-ceiling-breaking first female president, he told the roaring crowd. But misgivings about him gave way to a trust that emboldened his desire to serve, he said. Now, as he makes his exit after 8 years and with still so much to be done, Obama told voters that they would be wise to allow him to give the baton of leadership, as it were, to Clinton. And so he did it. It was a great speech. But speeches, as you know, especially of this type, are designed to throw you off guard. They're designed to present a reality that is so contrary to the reality you know. And that's why at conventions, it's nothing but speeches. A bunch of people, you know, speech after speech after speech, because it's the hard sell. They, both the Democrats and the Republicans, are selling themselves, the delegates, and selling the nation, because it is national coverage, on the wonderful choices that we have before us and why we should choose either candidate A or candidate B. And so they get the people who come out and make the sales pitches, but it's essentially a big sales pitch. However, here's what you need to keep in mind. Everybody, pretty much, in this scenario, is part of a huge lie. Nothing will be told that even approximates the truth here. Because what you need to know, and what is what they don't want you to know, or they are afraid of you knowing. I mean, if Barack Obama were to stand there and tell us the truth about Hillary Clinton, the same person who had cussed him up and down when he was running against her, who said all these awful things, oh, it's just nothing but love. It's an epiphany. It's a gathering of like-minded souls. It's almost a revival going on there. And Donald Trump comes across, he would, you know, all things are orchestrated so that he looks like a genuine leader, a guy with an active working brain, and he doesn't have one. So it's all illusion. But why does it get so much coverage? It's because there's so much money. Remember I told you that from the very beginning, the presidential races are, for the media, a lot about money. This is where they will make their big money. Other than the Olympics, other than the you know, the football games. This is the big thing. So you have the spectacle of who will do the best, who will have the best stage, who will have the best set, who will have the best collection of analysts, who will give the most coverage, who will do the most close-ups, who will do the most one-on-one interviews. All of this, because this is where the big money is rolling in. Hillary Clinton, it said, is spending upwards of almost $1 million a day in advertising. This is what is going on. So the nation gets to see a tame version of politics because they are proscribed by their own organizations. This is the media organizations, from doing anything harsh. They cannot. These analysts and these big-time, big-league journalists aren't there to tell you the truth about anything. They're not there to tear anything apart, to lift the scab off of the festering sore that we know both parties are. They're there simply to give the illusion that something is happening and that it is very important and that they're doing their best to relay the information to us as it happens. But there are going to be, 15 weeks to the general election. And that period of time between now the convention ending and the end of the general election, this is the big money. So everybody has an interest. The candidates and the parties have an interest in pulling off the biggest con of all time to get people back into the mode of the duopoly. You're either Republican or Democrat. That's it. That's all that matters. They're going to have speaker after speaker to tug at your heartstrings and tell you all kinds of stories that really don't matter in the scheme of things. What matters is whether these candidates who are presenting themselves as leaders or potential leaders of the country really deserve the shot, really have what it takes, really are above board and above suspicion. That's really what matters. Really, do they have any connection with where people are, what the needs are? Do they have any idea of how to deliver on those needs? This is just a sordid kind of carnival going on. And that's why, you know, I just didn't get all excited about it. But Barack Obama last night, I mean, he went all out and proved a number of things, which we will now discuss today. What did he prove by this speech? And why was it so important for him as an outgoing president to make a speech welcoming pretty much the incoming president? What was this whole thing? What was this whole arrangement about? And we will talk about the very important things here, and that is the key items the Democrats and the Republicans were able to get done. They were able to dispatch these things and get them done in the course of these conventions that lasted 3 or 4 days. And the importance of speeches in a convention with regard to our concept of participatory democracy. So let's listen to Barack Obama as he's bringing this whole thing to a close, a spectacular close. He's already laid out. This was a really fantastic thing he did without people even getting it. He was praising Hillary, but a very diplomatic way in which he did it. What he did was he praised her as the rightful inheritor of his good works. In other words, he anointed himself as well. Look, I'm leaving, but just so you know, here's my estimation of my own performance in 8 years of office. I've done pretty well. I've made mistakes, of course. There were so many things that still are to be done that I didn't get to. And I faltered, yes. But that's what happens when you're growing. That's what happens when you are in a position of leadership, and this office is a very heavy burden. But the people who so intimately understood my audacity of hope, they clung to it the way I did, and they redeemed me in their faith that I would do the right thing. And I trust that many of you think that I did the right thing. He's talking about himself. And then he got around to explaining why Hillary Clinton was the logical choice to be the next president of the United States. If you could stomach it, I'll just play you about 9 minutes of his almost 50-minute speech. Here he is.
This stateswoman, this mother and grandmother, this public servant, this patriot, that's the America she's fighting for. And that is why I have confidence, as I leave this stage tonight, that the Democratic Party is in good hands. My time in this office, it hasn't fixed everything. As much as we've done, there's still so much I want to do. But for all the tough lessons I've had to learn, for all the places where I've fallen short, I've told Hillary, and I'll tell you what's picked me back up every single time. It's been you, the American people. It's the letter I keep on my wall from a survivor in Ohio who twice almost lost everything to cancer, but urged me to keep fighting for health care reform, even when the battle seemed lost. Do not quit. It's the painting I keep in my private office, a big-eyed green owl with blue wings, made by a 7-year-old girl who was taken from us in Newtown, given to me by her parents so I wouldn't forget. A reminder of all the parents who have turned their grief into action. It's the small business owner in Colorado who cut most of his own salary so he wouldn't have to lay off any of his workers in the recession, because he said that wouldn't have been in the spirit of America. It's the conservative in Texas who said he disagreed with me on everything, but he appreciated that, like him, I try to be a good dad. It's the courage of the young soldier from Arizona who nearly died on the battlefield in Afghanistan, but who has learned to speak again and walk again, and earlier this year stepped through the door of the Oval Office on his own power to salute and shake my hand. It is every American who believed we could change this country for the better. So many of you who'd never been involved in politics, who picked up phones and hit the streets and used the internet in amazing new ways that I didn't really understand but made change happen. You are the best organizers on the planet, and I am so proud of all the change that you made possible. Time and again, you've picked me up. And I hope sometimes I picked you up too. And tonight, I ask you to do for Hillary Clinton what you did for me. I ask you to carry her the same way you carried me. Because you're who I was talking about 12 years ago when I talked about hope. It's been you who fueled my dogged faith in our future, even when the odds were great, even when the road is long. Hope in the face of difficulty. Hope in the face of uncertainty. The audacity of hope. America, you've vindicated that hope these past 8 years. And now I'm ready to pass the baton and do my part as a private citizen. So this year, in this election, I'm asking you to join me to reject cynicism and reject fear and to summon what is best in us to elect Hillary Clinton as the next president of the United States and show the world we still believe in the promise of this great nation. Thank you for this incredible journey. Let's keep it going. God bless you. God bless the United States of America.
Okay. Well, that was Barack Obama, bringing this rousing speech to a close, asking the nation and asking certainly Democrats to continue this road upon which he began, 8 years ago, fueled by the audacity of hope and hoping now that it would be a carryover to the person who is best qualified, this mother, this patriot, this incredible person, who on the same day he was making the speech, we did a program here saying that the IRS has opened an investigation and several nations have opened investigations into the running and the operations of the Clinton Foundation, which has been shown, documented, that it has been operating as a slush fund where billions and tens of billions of dollars have been washed through. Okay, well, here's the exercise right now. What did the Democrats achieve? What were the strategic goals and objectives achieved either from the Democratic Party or the Republican Party in their respective conventions? There's not a lot to think of, but the few that there are very important goals achieved during these conventions. And specifically, if you want to talk about the Democrats, because that's where Hillary is, my favorite subject, and, of course, the Republicans, the duopoly, they've now concluded their dog and pony shows, and they are now selling very hard the choice that should be made and going through a whole bunch of things in order to make those points. But something dramatic happened at the Democratic convention. It didn't get very much press at all, and it looked like just part of the deal. But it was extraordinary what happened there. And let's see if you get it. Let's see if you can put your finger on what happened at the Democratic National Convention so that we get to this point where we're feeling really good, but we don't quite know why. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We'll take the short break and get to your analyses of what you think these conventions did more than anything else right after this. We'll be right back. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're taking a look at the impact and the purpose of these national conventions. The Republicans have had theirs, and the Democrats are going to conclude theirs tonight. But we talked about speeches and what the speeches are for and so forth, and what the whole purpose of the convention is about, to, of course, officially name the standard bearer who will go into the general election in November against the other party's opponent. But we saw throughout the process a very astute use of media, a very astute use of speeches in order to shape our opinions about things. And to my mind, the Democrats, I mean, they just did it. They went all out. Big guns came in. They made their speeches. They had a lot of people talking about a lot of things. They had Hollywood stars. They had the mothers of the movement. Those are the mothers of young men who had been shot dead by police. They had all kinds of people coming forward talking about the logic of electing Hillary Clinton, extolling her virtues, talking about what she has done and what she is likely to do, and why she is the candidate who should be in the White House come November. But in the middle of all of this, we found some very unsettling things happening. And let's see if you could pinpoint what those unsettling things were. What you happened to notice in the course of, I didn't watch all of the conventions. I couldn't take it. But, you know, you watch the main points, you watch the main speeches, and you get a general sense of where things are going. I can't watch that stuff because it's really just, it's tinsel, it's make-believe, it's the, you know, it's a choreographed thing to make the case that the candidate in whichever camp happens to be covered is the candidate to be in the White House. But something very, very, very important happened on the Democratic side, and that is where we are going today. 888-874-4888. What did you gather? A very serious development in the Democratic Party camp. Let's see if you were able to pinpoint what happened there and how it contrasts with the celebratory mood, the upbeat mood, the hopeful mood. Everything was going so well, and the speeches were timed so that people could be, as Barack Obama talked about, they could be lifted up and be hopeful and positive about the future. But some serious things happened there in the middle of all of this. We talked about it here. Let's see if you can put your finger on it and tell us why these things happened, how these things happened, and how the media pretended that it didn't happen. Are you up to it? 888-874-4888. Now, this is part of what we call media literacy. We have to be very astute readers of how media operations end up being propaganda tools. Many of them are. But they fulfill a particular purpose, because behind it all, as I said, is money. This is where they make a lot of money. A lot of money. So they're not likely to do anything outside of the expected norms. They're not going to raise any hackles. They're not going to do major investigative pieces. They're not going to do meaty reporting. They're going to do just, you know, light stuff. Keep it light, keep it airy, keep it moving, and mimic the attitude and the atmosphere that the organizers of the conventions want. That's what they want. And the media agreed to rent themselves out for that purpose. This is major media now. So they're not engaging at that time when the thing is going down. They're not talking about it. They won't be talking about it. And if something major does warrant their attention and does warrant reporting, they'll do their very best to gloss over it and get on with the program being to keep everything nice and upbeat. And then you get, after the conventions are over, you'll get some other reporting. But this is the big money period. More than $5 billion, that's with a B, $5 billion would have been spent in media advertising in this election cycle. We have Kwame from New York. Hello, Kwame.
Yes, how are you doing, Therese?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Tell me what you noticed about the Democratic Convention.
What little of I watched. I mean, I couldn't really, you know, I have to be honest with you, I couldn't really stomach it, you know, but so long. A lot of acting, if you ask me. I mean, just a lot of, you know, promises. Well, not just promises, but a lot of exaggeration, how good the party is and what they plan for the future of the American people. And then the theatrics of bringing the mothers of children who were slain by the police, you know, and just putting them up there. I mean, this really is just theatrics.
What was, in your view, the most important thing, the most consequential thing that happened? And it didn't get very much press, really.
The most consequential. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard one. I can't really say. I mean,
I think you know the answer. You certainly do.
I think the embarrassing speech by the president to me might have been the most consequential.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
For me, I mean, and also, Tim Kaine. I mean, he sounds like an idiot. Personally, I mean, the guy's not too bright.
What about the tone of the speech then that the president made? What did it confirm to you?
What did it confirm? That he is a party hack. I mean, he's dedicated to white supremacy, furthering white supremacy. The whole thing about him and this relationship between Hillary and him also was so dishonest. I mean, after we know it, I mean, after the relationship during his run for president, everything like this, and you know, she's the greatest, you know, the greatest thing on earth. She's a mother, a patriarch, grandmother, and then also about his, when he talks about how tough she is, as far as, I think he even tried to say she made him tougher during the run for president. During that run, that period of run.
Yes, there's nobody, male or female, more qualified ever than Hillary Clinton, according to the president. Thanks for getting us started today, Kwame. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Philly. Yusuf, what was the most incredible thing that happened at that Democratic convention?
Hello, Eutresa. Good to hear you.
Thank you.
The one thing that I found interesting, I couldn't also watch and listen to a whole lot of it. I just couldn't stomach it, was how, I don't know if it was a slip-up on Terry McAuliffe's part for him to speak, and as your past shows, we were reported about Terry McAuliffe being under investigation in Virginia for his wrongdoings, money-wise, how he was able to come on and report and say that if Hillary Clinton became president, that she would go back and vote yes on the TPP, and how that really wasn't covered by CNN or MSNBC or the other corporate stations, and how then, I think, later on during the course of the day and the next day, how they came back and had him retract that statement. But I think it was too late. He had already spoke the truth on that. I found that very interesting.
Yes, it is very interesting. But you're not too close to the answer today. You're on the road, and thank you for bringing that to our attention, as a matter of fact. It was a very important thing. It got missed, as I said, and I explained at the top of the program, the media's job, especially those covering gavel to gavel, providing gavel to gavel coverage, if you will, their job is not to go there. They are not to raise these questions and have it explained. That's not their job. Their job is to answer to the corporate offices that they're doing the job of providing uplifting, happy coverage. Nothing really, intense is supposed to happen there, because they're now going to go down to the negotiating table to talk about what size of a budget they will get for the rest of the year. Thank you for calling, though, and getting us closer. Let's see if Ed from LA is going to give us the answer. Ed, are you there?
Talk about the pressure. Thanks for the show. Well, I found it totally amazing that here Obama was doing a real sales job. That was the whole point, was to sell Hillary. I found it totally amazing and totally fascinating, A, in the way that she got the nomination by massive voter fraud, email scandals, that these people completely ignored, that she somehow got there legitimately, and her legitimate way she got there, she's supposed to, I mean, he didn't even say, I ask for your vote for her. He like said, here, I'm going to hand the baton over, like there wasn't any choice. And at the very same time, when she's being nominated, there's an IRS probe that's being launched into her and her husband's fraudulent charity. So it's like what we're saying is it's okay to elect a crook. It's okay. It's fine.
It's okay.
No problem.
And but she's our crook. She
right, exactly.
Our beloved
she is our crook.
Crook.
Of course. Listen, I thought about this, and I said to myself, really, we're not engaged in the political process. We're living in one of the most narcissistic celebrity worship times of our life. So it's no coincidence that what you put into this universe, you get out of it. So who do we have? We have a reality star, and we have a crook running, and both are crooks, running for office. And, because we never engage. We never bother to. Thank God. I mean, between your show and Gary Null's show, I'm getting information and knowledge. I used to like be a Democrat and think be a liberal, but I've gotten a whole new perspective on the way things really are, and the way the media and these two political parties try to do the sales job. And the people that end up making out on this always are the defense contractors and the corporations. Doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. They're the ones gaining the power. They're the ones running the show and pulling the strings.
But you got us. You're very, very, very close. You're very close. And you provided, I think, the foundational argument for where the answer is. But great. Thanks so much for calling. This was a good input there. Well, let's try Mark from Denver. Mark from Denver, what was the most significant thing
Hi, Utrecht. I hope I had the right answer.
Well, there are no wrong answers, but this one has a particular, there's a particular answer I'm looking for.
Well, one thing that was obvious and very, very disgusting throughout the whole proceedings so far, every speaker almost is reinventing the Cold War and pointing fingers at Russia and Putin. Clinton's two go-to people on foreign policy are Robert Kagan, Project for a New American Century, Robert Kagan, and Victoria Nuland, who was already in her State Department. They are reinventing the Cold War, and a very, very militaristic, very, very pro-military, more pro going into foreign, more foreign countries. Every speaker, all these people have sons in the Marines, it seems, you know? It's, that's what I got out of it.
Okay. And you're right. You're absolutely right. There was a lot of emphasis on this militaristic. That was this militaristic attitude echoed both in the Republican and Democratic camps.
And Putin.
But of course, Hillary blamed Putin for the email business.
They had to continue with the theme.
But they also kept on pushing
Russia on the Ukraine and Crimea, and this is what you will see in a Clinton presidency.
Okay, but that was not for our consumption. Those were messages meant for people who were looking for affirmation. They probably were not in the United States, but people who, for example, had a keen role to play in funding the foundation for various reasons. They were looking for signs that they were still in her thoughts and prayers.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much, Mark, for your call.
Thank you.
Okay, Henry from Chicago, you better get the answer.
Well, oh, my God, you put the pressure on me now?
No pressure or anything. What was the most significant thing that happened with the Democratic Party's convention? The most significant thing?
Okay, well, I was hoping the previous callers would have hit on it by the time it got to me, because they had some very, very... They had some very, very good perspectives on it. But here's what I took out of it. Hopefully this will be the answer that you're looking for. What I got out of this, you know, and I didn't watch a lot of it because, you know, like the previous caller said, I couldn't stomach a lot of it. But it was all about promoting fear. And it was all about promoting fear of Donald Trump. I mean, his name was mentioned so much in all of these speeches. It was like, is Donald Trump part of the Democratic Party? Because his name was mentioned the most out of all the speakers. So, you know, it's this fear of you know, Donald Trump being the president was their promotion to the American public. We can't let Donald Trump, you know, be president because this is going to happen and that is going to happen. So that's what I basically got out of it. Fear-mongering campaign.
Thank you. You did a good job. And you're right. But there is something that happened at the Democratic Party that was so significant. And I'm waiting to get the answer. Walter from Virginia, you better be the one.
Hello, Patrice. It's always good to speak with you as well as the lead story audience.
Thank you so much.
I called in a little late, so I haven't heard all the callers, so maybe someone has already mentioned this. But what I feel was significant was that Hillary Clinton was nominated by acclamation by a black woman by virtue of Bernie Sanders basically waving any of his delegates' right to vote. So basically, there was no opposition from Bernie Sanders.
And why is there no opposition from Bernie Sanders?
Because Bernie Sanders is part and parcel in and of himself, because he knows that he doesn't want to lose his seat in Vermont to Democrats, and so he's basically a closet Democrat.
Well, Walter, you have put us not only in the neighborhood, you put us on the street here. You put us on the street, and you put us in the neighborhood of the answer. It does concern Bernie Sanders. I thank you.
All right, thank you.
You're now going to have a great day. You got us close. All right. Julie from New York, what is the most significant thing that happened there?
Well, the fact that Democracy Now! Covered a lot of the opposition from Bernie supporters, but I think they might underestimate the power of the people that are not going to go along with the Democratic Party, that will go to third parties and make, you know, that they're not going to follow Bernie, because certainly I'm not. He agreed to support the Democratic nominee, but we didn't. So I think they might have underestimated the committedness of the revolution, those of us who do not plan to go along with him and support Hillary.
Okay, we're getting closer. Thank you so much. David from Brooklyn.
Hello. What's on my mind is this. I'm getting back to Bernie Sanders, and many commentators have said that he was a sheepdog. I don't see him as a sheepdog. He was a Judas goat. And what has happened is that those 13 million votes that he got, those people have been played. What I believe, this is my idea, is that the Democratic Party decided that Hillary Clinton long ago should be the nominee, but they didn't want to make it seem like a coronation. So they entice Bernie to get in there and corral all of those people into that corral with 13 million votes or so about. And the point is that he knew what his role was. During the time when many forums were held, or so-called debates, Bernie was like in a battle where he was throwing spitballs or with going with a BB gun, and he never brought out the heavy artillery, the rhetorical artillery, to attack Clinton on many fronts. You can't tell me he didn't know about all these deficits in her case. He knew about all these things, but he did not bring out the heavy guns rhetorically to deal with Clinton. So he was playing softball, playing a game of softball with Clinton instead of coming out with the heavy artillery. So, you know, that's essentially what it was. And I even think there might have been even a conspiracy at the top to entice him to get into the debate for president. And he went along with it, and the people that got into his camp, that 13 million, didn't understand the game that was being played.
Well, if it is of any consolation to you, I think you've done the job of getting us right, not just in the neighborhood, not just on the street, but in front of the house with this answer.
Bernie's going to make my book.
What we witnessed, and this is very important, this is how smoothly it was done. We witnessed the execution of a Democratic Party, small d. We witnessed the dismantling of it, and with great precision. It's all done speeches and whatnot. All speeches, because even the the target, Bernie Sanders, was made to make a speech. He conceded. He fell on the sword in the speech.
That
he betrayed all of his 13 million votes with a speech.
That's
and so
right.
The Democratic Party was able to remove perhaps the greatest threat to Hillary Clinton with mm-hmm. nice speeches.
Right. And, Bernie sounded to me like some of those people who are tortured and made to give a televised confession.
Correct. Exactly
the same thing. That's the way it sounded to me.
And that's exactly what they did. And everybody knew it. And yet mm-hmm. it was just discussed as, well, you know, Bernie Sanders seeing the error of his ways or seeing the practicality of things, and of course going with the line that Donald Trump is the greatest threat. No, the greatest threat is the Democratic Party, because the Democratic Party refused to let a wing within the party survive and thrive mm-hmm. and forced it to concede and yes. assassinated it in public. That's the most significant thing that happened there.
Absolutely.
Well, all right, David. All right, then. You did
all right.
Good and proud today.
All right, very good.
Thank you. We will continue discussing this, because this is a very, very, very serious thing, and people should take it very seriously. You had a movement that was doing very good things on a spit and chewing gum budget and with people with immense, immense drive and with a tenacity that we haven't seen since the Rainbow Coalition, perhaps, or even Barack Obama's first run. And they were making inroads. They were sabotaged. Their success apparently was written on a wall somewhere. People saw, look, if this thing keeps going the way it's going, we're sunk. They did everything possible to railroad this movement. The massive voter frauds, the unaccounted for votes, 2 million of them in California alone. It did not rise to the level of national crisis by any of these Democrats talking about democracy. It certainly did not rise to the level of crisis for anybody in the Republican camp either. But this is the most significant thing. The Democrats committed, well, we could call it particide. It killed a party and got away with it. And all it did was make speeches. Even, as David suggests, even having the leader of this burgeoning movement, this thriving movement, with so much possibility, so much potential for creating change and supplanting the Democratic Party itself, to get him up there and publicly concede and genuflect before a most undeserving candidate, and for a most undeserving party. That's what the Democratic Party did. And we should never forget it. It killed a party and got the leader of that movement to participate enthusiastically in extolling the virtues of somebody who shouldn't even be dog catcher. It's an insult to dogs. Now, that's what's the most significant thing. Nobody bothered to talk about that. And they reframed it. They massaged it into something different. This was unity. the killing of this party, the killing of this movement, the snuffing out of 13 million votes democratically obtained became a matter of unity. And that's how it's done. They weren't hiding it. This was not done in some kind of a, this was in the open with all those big old television lights, lots of music and high energy and raucous applause for people recognizing that Bernie Sanders was so magnanimous. He had a gun to his head and they pulled the trigger in public. And so they finished off any threat, immediate threat, to the Democratic Party. And they also dealt a death blow or potential death blow to this party ever regaining the momentum to do what it had set out to do from the beginning. You see how democracy works? You see how speeches work? And we have an agreement among all parties concerned in this that that's the way it's going to go. It feels good. It was a nice, good feel. But it was a brutal slaughter and assassination, a wholesale, massive violation of millions of people's voting rights. It was a crime. Committed in public against a backdrop of high energy, high voltage music and great shots from the cameras and panel after panel of very, very, very deep thinking journalists. But nobody, nobody dared to say what was really going on. The nation and the world witnessed an assassination, a political assassination. That's the most significant thing that happened there during the Democratic National Convention. See? Now we'll pick this up again tomorrow and get the fine details. But we have to understand that's what happened. That's what happened. And this is why the people who galvanized themselves behind this movement are also in a position to fashion an entirely different way of doing politics, this kind of politics. People got screwed like this with Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition. They got screwed like this with Michael Dukakis, with Barack Obama. And what does Barack Obama do? He sets the tone. Hey, you know me. I'm the guy who talked about the audacity of hope. And I'm now passing the bennies off to somebody who shouldn't even be in the circle of consideration. He sanctified, he cleaned her up, sanctified her. Now that's how politics is done. So that's the lesson. The lesson is we witnessed a public assassination of a political movement and a political, possible political party by the Democratic Party. And we will continue this discussion tomorrow. But thank you so much. It was an extraordinary session today and very enthusiastic. And we will return to it tomorrow. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You want to stay tuned for that. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your esteemed company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.